Hello and welcome to a special edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. We're with you live until almost 1 o'clock today. We'll have music, festive cheer, nostalgia and reflection all to come. But first we start as usual with our panel, and joining me in the studio I have Kevin Doyle, Group Political Editor with Independent News and Media, David Davenpower, former RTE political correspondent, and Lise Hand, columnist with the Times Ireland edition. Now, reading the commentary today, it seems that Leo Varadkar's ascension to power is the story, the political story of the year, and that homelessness and housing will be the two issues that are going to play a huge role next year. Lise, I'm going to start with you. Leo Varadkar, I suppose, first. What's your assessment of his first couple of months?
Well, I mean, he's certainly ending the year on a bit of a high. I mean, the last poll that came out recently had him at 53% approval rating, and you know, the party streaking ahead of Fianna Fáil. So you could say he's had a bit of a Leo leap at the end of the year, and you know, he's dominated almost the entire year, because we had the very slow goodbye for the first 6 months, you know, leading up to Enda Kenny's sort of, you know, eventual departure, and then the very protracted contest between himself and Simon Coveney for the leadership. And then really he was more or less plunged into the whole nightmare that is Brexit, and obviously took, you know, absolutely front and centre stage over that, particularly over the last month or so, which probably accounts for the bounce. So, you know, he's certainly been high profile, and a lot of it of his own making, of course, because he's a man who's terribly, terribly fond of, you know, selfies and sock selfies and whatever you're having yourself, and, you know, kept himself very much to the fore. Now, of course, he will be judged on the more, I suppose, substantial things like housing and homelessness, which I know we will talk about. And certainly to date, that's been an abject failure. I mean, he's ending that is definitely a black mark against him at the end of the year, with the figures just rising all the time. So I think it's probably a mixed bag. Mm. Good on the you know, the international front in terms of Brexit, but there's still a lot of problems at home that he just absolutely hasn't tackled yet.
Well, Kevin, it could have all been so different when we look back on what happened with the Francis Fitzgerald affair and how that was handled. And of course, Brexit came straight off the back of that. But had that played out differently, we might be in a very different situation today.
Yeah, I think he's been a lucky general to some extent in that since he took office, there was kind of that flowed into the summer. It was back in June, and there was kind of all the hype around him being the first gay Taoiseach, and his age and all the rest, and how well it would look for Ireland internationally. And that went really well. It played really well with people at the time. We went away for the summer, came back in September into the budget. A bit of toing and froing with Fianna Fáil, always inevitable. And then the Francis Fitzgerald thing came out of nowhere. And a bit like Lise says, that was the first big test that you couldn't kind of wash away with selfies or smiles and photo calls. And he made a call. And I'm not sure, I'm still not convinced that people actually think he got it wrong on Frances Fitzgerald. I think people knew in the end she had to go because they didn't want a Christmas election. Imagine where we'd be today if he hadn't.
You know, I actually think we should have a moment's silence and reflect. We could be in a count centre somewhere on like the 15th count in some cold room.
Yeah.
So, well, of course, I know, yeah. I mean, I actually feel sort of a wave of gratitude washing over me, you know, that we were spared that.
A toast to Frances Fitzgerald.
Yes, absolutely.
but there is that. But you're right, because that bounced straight onto Brexit, people have forgotten. It's probably sad for Francis Fitzgerald this Christmas, but people have forgotten about Francis Fitzgerald already.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a blip on the Leo Varadkar CV of the last 6 months, but one that was only a blip. And it came so close to bringing the government down, it's almost funny how quickly forgotten about it and moved on from it.
Mm-hmm, because Brexit, of course, as you say, took over. David, right. you're looking at this from a different position than you were before.
Well, I mean, I still take a pretty keen interest in all these things. Leo has been lucky. He made, I think, a bad call in terms of Frances Fitzgerald, but one that played well within the party. I mean, he stuck up for her and didn't force her out over that weekend when it was clear she had to go. But I think loyalty is prized in Fine Gael and some sections of it anyway, and I think that among some of the party grassroots, they will have been looking at Leo with new eyes and say, well, he is maybe a person of more substance than the selfies might indicate. But I think that politically it probably was damaging. It left him in a bad place with Fianna Fáil. Micheál Martin, I think, you know, played his cards fairly adroitly. I don't think there was ever any chance of a general election. I don't think that was ever going to happen, no matter what way the cards fell. And then, as as Kevin was saying there, luck came to his assistance in that the Brexit crisis, if you will, came to a head a couple of days later, and Frances Fitzgerald is consequently completely forgotten.
It's interesting that you say that it damaged the relationship with Fianna Fáil, because in the shakedown afterwards, we saw lots of commentary, people saying that actually Micheál and Leo got to know each other quite well over those negotiations.
I would actually agree with that. I mean, I think that it's a paradoxical kind of relationship between the two parties. There's huge distrust between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in Leinster House among the TDs. But I think that the relationship between Leo and Micheál has actually been forged into a stronger one by the fact that they had to, well, eyeball each other over that weekend. And I'm not one of those that says that there's going to be a general election inevitably next year. I think there's every chance that it suits both sides to get through the budget, notwithstanding the fact that it might be a generous one from the government's point of view. But you never know. We never saw the Frances Fitzgerald thing coming. But one thing I will say is, you know, politics moves very quickly. Frances Fitzgerald, gone. Enda Kenny, gone. Enda, we were consumed by what Enda was going to do for the first 4 months of this year. He actually had quite a good lap of honour. He faced down Trump in the White House, as he promised he would. He got international kudos for that, but it's all forgotten.
Mm-hmm. And you move on. The Fianna Fáil question is fascinating. Really is. What will Fianna Fáil do in 2018? Will they allow that big budget to go through, as David says?
I disagree with David on that. I think we will have an election next year. I think it's inevitable, because I just don't see how Micheál Martin can let it go all the way to October. And what happens then? Because as we've learned in recent weeks, people become a lot more aware that a budget doesn't just happen on a Tuesday in October. A budget drags on, that the last measures of the budget only got through in the last fortnight in the Dáil, and there was a big rush to get them through before Christmas. So actually, by saying they support the budget, they're actually saying that they're going to next Christmas. Now, we know people don't like Christmas elections, so that means we're gone into 2019, and I just don't see how Micheál Martin managed to convince his own party, whatever about his own mind, but his own party to do that. He's had three strikes this year. He had the Tuusla scenario with Enda Kenny and his, I think, probably sitting in this studio making up stories about conversations he did or didn't have with Catherine Zappone. Then he had the Attorney General when Maura Whelan got that big court appointment as Enda Kenny walked out the door. Mm-hmm. And then the Frances Fitzgerald was the third strike. And every time Micheál Martin went to the top of the hill, and every time he marched back down, and I don't think he can go there again. And there will be something. It might be an event, but if it's not an event, it'll be housing.
But then you get the blame for causing the election.
Exactly.
That's the trouble.
I think his narrative, though, is that if housing doesn't start to show some improvement soon, his narrative is the homeless figures hit, say, 3,500 children rather than 3,300 that we're at, or 4,000 children, and you go, that's the straw that broke the camel back.
How can Fianna Fáil walk away from responsibility for some aspect of the housing crisis, something that has been probably a generation in the making?
Well, this is the trouble. And I mean, you also have to look at the polls, because every politician will sit here, and I'm sure you've seen this so many times, Claire, and they will look you straight in the eye and say, a poll is a snapshot in time and we don't pay any attention to polls. And it's the greatest
lie of
all time. That's
perfect, what you said there. Yes, I'll just play that again and again. That's what we hear all the time in this studio.
Because they do, and they do care. They care deeply, and they do pay attention. And, you know, this will factor into, I think, the next date with general election. Now, I tend to agree with one point both of Kevin and David made, that it's events, dear boys, events with this particular government, and things happen and banana skins appear and, you know, trapdoors open and people disappear down it. And I actually think we were very close to general election of stumbling into it. I think there was every possibility that we would have been on the doors in December. I think that Fianna Fáil have to make the decision. Do they gamble that they will start picking up points in the polls as the government popularity slips, maybe next year when various crises, you know, happen, or when the Brexit thing just becomes the new normal, so to speak? Do they wait until the gap closes and then pull the plug, or do they march on something and hope that if it's a matter of principle, people will respect them for it? So I think Micheál has got a lot of juggling, I think, to do next year to get that timing right. I'm not so sure it'll go into the following year. I suspect there will be an election, but I think it'll be a sudden one. Okay. I don't think we'll see it coming.
So we have two who are saying a 2018 election, and one over here who says no, 2019.
Well, I've got strong views on this, but they're very lightly held.
Okay, that's a fine line. Can we talk about Sinn Féin?
Let's talk about Sinn Féin, because Sinn Féin is going to see huge change next year when Mary Lou takes over from Gerry Adams. What will that do for the party? How will it change things? And that subtle shift in language we saw from Micheál Martin last weekend, I think it was, in the interview in the Irish Times, where he said, never say never. I think that was a fundamental shift. So, Lise, what's your take on the Mary Lou effect?
Well, I think we're all running on the assumption that Mary Lou will be the next president. They may, just to take the bare look off it, you know, persuade somebody to throw their chapeau into the ring just to maybe make a democratic contest of it, because they know that the first thing that every other party will do will pile in about somebody being coronated. Instead of, you know, a democratic election. So we'll run on the assumption that it will be Mary Lou. The first thing she's going to have to do when she gets in there is change the culture by which the party is run, because they are riven with controversies at the moment over bullying, various allegations of bullying within their own party ranks, particularly among councillors. And I think this is very much the growing pains of a party that is expanding, taking on people that don't have the past baggage, don't particularly feel they should, you know, they should toe a very militaristic sort of discipline line that the, you know, structure of the party's run on. And the first thing she's going to have to do is go in there and sort that out and perhaps bring in a totally new way of doing business whereby dissent within the party is actually permissible and allowable. I mean, if you think about
it... Are we seeing any signs from her, though, that she's going to do that?
Not so far, no. Mm. I think the one thing she did do, though, obviously she was the one that ran the flag up the pole about the party being prepared to go into coalition as a junior partner. So, I mean, that was obviously a huge shift. But, you know, not to date, we really haven't seen her come out and say, you know, anything that you're kind of going, okay, the party's definitely going to go in a new direction. Now, there is probably a bit of, you know, don't speak ill of anybody and anything Gerry did until Gerry has left the stage. Because, you know, if you think back remarkably for 34 years, I mean, we've all sat on the press gallery in Leinster House, and I have never heard anybody in Sinn Féin stand up in the Dáil and say anything remarkably, even remotely derogatory about the party leader, either inside or out.
Well, I think the crucial question for Sinn Féin is, what are Gerry Adams' intentions after he steps down? Will he genuinely leave the stage, or will he be behind the scenes exerting an influence? Because make no mistake, Gerry Adams, whatever you think about his performance in the Dáil and in Leinster House, has total mastery of Sinn Féin from top to bottom. He, in a sense, is Sinn Féin, almost in the way that De Valera was Fianna Fáil for many years. And what's very interesting about Sinn Féin's behaviour since they achieved a substantial status in Leinster House is that they're following the Fianna Fáil playbook of the 1920s. When Fianna Fáil entered the Dáil, the instructions were, first of all, oppose everything that the government puts up, and second of all, don't fraternise. That's one of the interesting things about Sinn Féin, is that they never come into the Dáil bar. They generally stick to themselves. They don't really have political friendships outside their own party. And it's a very distinct type of political culture around the corridors of Leinster House. So
we had Kate O'Connell here last week saying she's great friends with Mary Lou.
Good. I'm delighted to hear it. But I'm just telling you what I observed. So is Mary Lou going to be able to change the culture of Sinn Féin to give it that quantum leap that will make it, you know, give them those extra seats? Will she be able to change the governance, whereby it's largely unelected people north of the border that call all the shots? It's a big imponderable. The party has a very entrenched military style discipline embedded in its culture. Is that going to change? And are they going to allow more openness in terms of the selection of their candidates? Because, well, I have a theory about Sinn Féin. People say, oh, Gerry Adams is holding them back. I think part of their problem is a lot of their TDs are really rather colourless people that we don't know a great deal about, because, as we know, there is a culture within the party that whoever is I'm not saying imposed by headquarters, but there's less bottom-up democracy in terms of candidate selection than you might see in other parties. It's all a little opaque. So I think a few more characters. I think we all miss Arthur Morgan around the place. We have to wait and see. But I think that it's going to be a difficult task changing the culture of a party that's gone through so much.
I'm not sure I agree that they're colourless. I mean, we have people from right across Sinn Féin in this studio, and they're as giving as anybody else. You know, I'm not sure you could call them colourless.
Well, let me think of a different word. I mean, there aren't too many standout personalities.
Okay.
It's the
same way.
It is. That's the definition of colourless, I think, David, you've just given. But it's a curious one. And just to pick up on one thing David said there, which is the Dáil Bar thing, which I know people in the real world hear about the Dáil Bar and they cringe at the idea of the Dáil Bar. But there was a night recently where there was a late night sitting, and Mary Lou MacDonald and Martin Ferris and a couple of other Sinn Féin TDs were actually holding court in a corner of the Dáil Bar, and the rest of the Dáil Bar was craned to look at them. The very idea that they were sitting among the rest of the mere mortals of Leinster House.
It's that unusual.
It is unusual. Yeah. That is how strange it is. And that probably answers David's colourless question in some ways, perhaps.
Do you sense change in the air, though, Kevin, when it comes to Sinn Féin?
I think there is change because they've decided there's going to be change. So it's not the Leo Varadkar kind of I'm the new man of Fine Gael type of change. It's a very structured change that Gerry has decided. Fine Gael changed because the young bucks, the Simons and the Leos, decided that they were done with Enda Kenny. He'd had his good chance. He'd had 6 years as the Taoiseach and he'd had a long stint as party leader, and they decided to change it. In Sinn Féin, Gerry has decided. Nobody told Gerry to go. Gerry decided that it was time for him to move on, to pass the baton to Mary Lou MacDonald. And it struck me when the presidential election, the Áras election, was back in the news during the week, that if you think back to what Martin McGuinness, to the vote that he got in that 2011 presidential election, Sinn Féin have never really surpassed that since. So in all the times that have moved on in those years since, Martin McGuinness got a decent vote in that election, but in percentage terms, the party have never really moved on from there. So they're kind of stuck. And I think Gerry Adams knew they were stuck, and he decided that, well, maybe if he was the one holding them back, that I think he'll still be pulling the strings. I think he'll still be writing the scripts.
But that important change, and Lise, you mentioned it, Mary Lou saying that they're willing to go in as a junior partner in government, that shows a willingness now to go into government. And that is a very big change for them going into the next election, having that message to sell.
Except if you imagine we go into that election, say we stumble into an election in February or March, and there's still no executive in the north. It'll be, I think it's the 16th of January was when they pulled the plug up north, and we're a year without any sort of administration up there. It's very hard to come down here and run an election campaign saying we want to be in government, and you're going, well, you can be in government, but you haven't been able to make it work in a year.
Westminster, if they actually drop their 7 year,
well,
you
they
know,
could probably collapse
abstention.
The government in
abstention.
Westminster if
they could
wanted.
Absolutely, yeah.
I honestly don't think that would be a factor with voters down here. I think they tend to kind of
I agree, but it's a hard narrative to run.
It is. It's something that would be thrown at them in studios like this, but I think they'd be able to bat it back. I think the loss of Martin McGuinness for Sinn Féin during the year is huge, because he was a man who put the kind of human face in the party that perhaps I was rather clumsily trying to address. And he was certainly a strategist, and he was certainly somebody who had walked the walk back in the day. But more than anything else, I think he was a strategist, almost in a way that Adams isn't. Adams seems almost locked into a medium-term strategy, but I always got the impression that Martin saw over the horizon for Sinn Féin.
Can we talk about where politics is going? Because the last election we did see a definite shift to independence and to the left. And all of the recent polls seem to say that the shift is happening back into the centre now.
Mm, yeah. I think it's probably got a lot to do with an economy that, you know, on various fronts is stabilising. Obviously, you know, employment figures have dropped considerably. Unemployment figures have dropped considerably. There is, you know, more money floating around. And I think when you have high levels of protest and a very angry electorate, they tend to vote, say, either against their own usual party lines or else for non-aligned independence and so on. And that's why we saw an absolute raft of independents coming in last time. And, you know, they don't really seem to have made any gains in the polls. The numbers have sunk, or they, you know, they're sort of where they were. So it'll be interesting, I think, to see if some of the parties, say like Labour, I mean, I'm astonished that Labour haven't made more gains, you know, at the moment. I really can't understand. They are just literally stuck. They represent, I suppose, the sort of the centre of the left. You have, you know, obviously you've got the harder left elements making all the noise, and Labour are just nowhere. And it's remarkable.
And
to
you
me.
Don't, you can't see why that is.
I mean, they probably had more. Alan Kelly obviously raised their profile over the whole Francis Fitzgerald thing because he was sort of leading, running the book on that. But they really haven't found themselves a space in the Dáil, and they are swamped constantly. The amount of times I've sat in studios and we've had discussions about, that's why I deliberately mentioned Labour, because I've sat and we've had discussions about where politics is going, and at the end of it somebody will say, God, we never mentioned Labour. Mm-hmm. They just, their profile has vanished. I don't know whether that's to do with the maybe a leader, Brendan, you know, Brendan Health hasn't really carved a place for them, but I'd be very worried about their future in the next election.
Much as I like him, he's a politician that you can talk to about anything except politics if you want to. Much as I like Brendan Helen, I think that Labour made the wrong choice. I know that Alan Kelly isn't everybody's cup of tea, but he would certainly have kept them in the headlines. He's young, he's vigorous. He might have got into the spot of hot water now and then, but I just think that Brendan has been around a long time, a very long time. He's done well in politics. He's been a good minister, but I just don't think this is the job for him.
Well, Alan Kelly did give him 6 months. On the 7th of November, he said he wanted to see a change in how Labour are talking to the electorate. So can we expect a push?
They have, set a target of 15 seats whenever the election comes. They have their manifesto ready to run. They have some decent candidates, and I entirely agree with Lise. I know you want us to have a fight here, Claire, but it's actually hard to because
it's Christmas. No, that's okay.
I entirely agree with Lise that they're just sitting there on 4 or 5%, and they have become this forgotten party around Leinster House, and the potential is there for much more. And a strange thing strikes me, which is Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael should almost be trying to give Labour a bit of a push up the ladder. They should almost be helping them, because come next election, if there's to be any way that we don't end up in a minority government scenario again, I don't believe that Fianna Fáil and Micheál Martin will do a deal with Sinn Féin. Certainly not yet, anyway. Not next time round. But I think if we're not to have the same scenario again with independence and a minority government with a confidence and supply, Labour is the one party that can offer up, maybe if they came back with 10 TDs, that could be the balance of power. And so for being so small, they could end up with huge power. But at the minute, it's just not happening for them.
I mean, the one thing that might save them, and you're dead right again, so much agreement here, is that the one thing that might save them in the next election, I think, is they may become less transfer toxic because they were last time. And they lost quite a lot of narrow battles because the transfers just didn't fall their way. Whereas I think Kevin's absolutely right, if the bigger parties go out on the doors and try and say, you know, transfer to Labour, give them whatever, in the close fought elections, it might actually make a difference and might save them. Mm. But they're not doing anything to save themselves. And it's absolutely remarkable, you know. I mean, there is
It's back to that old lesson, isn't it? The junior partner in a coalition government just gets absolutely chewed up. So Shane Ross and the Independent Alliance, watch out.
The Greens before them.
That's right.
PDs, Progressive Democrats.
Yeah. That's right.
There is, of course, if you look at their 7 TDs in Leinster House as well, you know, you have Brendan Howland, who was the public expenditure minister associated with all the things that happened. You have Joan Burton, is still one of the most high profile people. Willie Penrose, who was in government as well at one point. And it's
those
kind
three
of,
going to stand again?
Well, according to Brendan and Janice Sullivan, was education minister. According to Brendan Howland, they're all on the ticket. If the snap election had happened, they'd all be on the ticket. Now, I'd have a question mark over a couple of them, but Joan Burton's already had her convention, so her name is down and dotted. Willie Penrose was probably the biggest question mark, but Janice Sullivan is definitely running again. So yeah, they're all on the ticket. So where Sean Sherlock and Alan Kelly should really be leading the charge, but they seem to stand behind them. Behind the guys who've been there forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what happens in the new year.
We're always just desperate for some kind of heave next year.
Well, certainly it'll be lively times with Alan Kelly at the helm, that's for sure.
So what are going to be the big issues next year? I mean, very obviously, housing and homeless will be top of that list.
Housing, homeless.
Justice, the Gardaí.
Yeah.
So same old then, really. Lots to look forward to.
Brexit, Trump. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing next year will be, of course, will the White House will the White House visit happen? Because Donald Trump might just turn around and go, no, you know, to hell with the Irish, we're not having them over here. That's, you know, he may, I mean, who knows? But if it is, it looks like it'll be, you know, Leo Varadkar going to the White House, and that'll be fascinating, actually.
It certainly that'll will. Bigly fascinating.
Yeah, so that'll be one to look
forward
to.
Breakfast at Mike Pence House will be even more fascinating, given some of his views as
That's
well.
True.
That would be absolutely, yeah.
It's tradition on St. Patrick's Day, where when the Taoiseach goes over, that he has breakfast. It's usually Eggs Florentine, I think, Lee, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, at the Naval Observatory. Beautiful house as well.
Beautiful, but it's with the Vice President, but Mike Pence's views on homosexuality and
could make for a chilly Eggs Florentine, I think, this year or next year, you know.
Very, very interesting. I do think housing is going to be the one, though, and I think unless some big justice issue or something pops up, as almost happened, I think that will be the issue that we go to the country on. And I think that for two reasons. One is, at the minute, we're hearing a lot about homelessness, and it's in the media, and the great documentary RT did earlier in the week on homelessness. And that's because Christmas, we all become a little bit more charitable and we all think about these things a little bit more. But when we move on from that and we start to think how it affects us, because that's what we actually think about in an election. We won't think about homelessness in an election, or most people won't. But what they will think about is the rents and the fact that they can't buy a house. And that's going to hurt Fine Gael, because that is Middle Ireland. When Mammy and Daddy down in Offaly or Laois want to send little Johnny up to college in Dublin and they can't afford to pay the rent or even find somewhere for him to rent.
Yeah, or little Johnny's still sleeping in the family bedroom at the age of 30 because they can't afford a mortgage.
And that's going to hurt Fine Gael, and I think that's what Fianna Fáil will have to go after if they want to spark a proper election.
It just feels like such an intractable problem.
Well,
you know, all of these initiatives and nothing seems to be having any major impact.
Well, it is an intractable problem because it's been coming for years. Local authorities disposing of housing stock and not replacing them. Government putting tax incentives in place for God knows what kind of ventures, holiday homes and all the rest of it. And now we're saddled with this. I must say, I'm not so sure how you can make an election issue out of it, because it is so intractable. I mean, I know you get the image of the rough sleepers is always thrown out, but there's not to diminish their plight, but there's 8,000 adults and children homeless, people trying to eke out a day's living, going off to work from places near me like the Regency, the Bonington Hotel, and the Respond Centre on the High Park and Grace Park Road. They're trying to get on with their lives, and they've no homes. Whereas God knows the handful of rough sleepers have a multiplicity of problems to deal with. I just don't see there being a quick fix to it. I mean, we've all seen the housing problems in London this week. The statistics are startling. I see, even from Lisa's paper, The Times, that there are 4,000 homeless people in New Zealand, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. I was in Milan there a couple of weeks ago, and the number of rough sleepers is really very striking there. This is not just a problem that's confined to Ireland.
I think the trouble is that the government don't seem to perceive that, you know, the housing crisis and the homelessness crisis are twinned, and they seem to be trying to deal with them, you know, with two separately, rather than seeing them of two halves of the same whole. Solve one and the other automatically, this situation improves. If you solve the housing, if you get to grips with housing, it will immediately, obviously, have a knock-on effect on the homes.
But maybe if Rebuilding Ireland starts to have an impact towards the middle of next year, we might be in a very different place, or am I being overly optimistic?
I think you're being overly optimistic, to be honest. You remember Simon Coveney set that deadline, I think, July, to have all families out of hotels. It came, it went, it was forgotten about, and now Owen Murphy won't even set a deadline. He's been asked 3 or 4 times this week. There's 3,333 children homeless this Christmas. Mm. Can you guarantee them they won't be homeless next Christmas? And he won't say yes.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think he's right, because you're not going to solve it. You're not going to solve it in a year. I think there is progress being made. Some of these family hubs around the place are beginning to kick in. But it's a structural problem embedded in our economy. And will attitudes have to change? As Ronan Lyons says, do we have to change our mindset about how we live? Do we have to embrace apartment living as a long-term prospect for families in a way that they do in many other countries? I mean, that's going to be a shift that will take generations.
Well, whatever we have to do, we have to embrace whatever it is, whether it's those new ideas, pretty quickly, because you mentioned the documentary on RTE. Mm. I mean, just that when you see what people are going through, living in hotels with children, 2 buses to school, 2 buses home in the dark, going to the takeaway for your dinner, you know, not getting your breakfast at a hotel. It's just, it's horrific.
And I think it is, it's not... Like, it's not sort of an issue on the door, so to speak, but it's ever present, I think, in people's minds, because I think a lot of people would fear that you're only maybe four bad paychecks away from that yourself. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's the whole way we look at homelessness has changed, because it's not just about rough sleepers like it used to be. You know, you hear the heartbreaking stories of people who literally just caught a few bad breaks, maybe one lost a job, a few things came together, and next thing they're just... You know, they're at the mercy of you know, of the system, of having gone from security. And I think that
I think most people now know people who haven't lost a job, but who are told by landlords, move out because I need this for my sister or my son, when that really means a rent increase. And they cannot find somewhere else to go. But within a reasonable rent level.
The system makes no sense. And like, on, even on a personal level, I bought a house this year, lucky enough, but my rent is was way, way more than my mortgage repayments. And I now live in a house from having lived in a small apartment. And it doesn't
and you're
make,
paying less.
I'm paying less in my mortgage than I was in my rent. It makes absolutely no sense that the system is constructed in that way. And the problem for well, was Simon Coveney, Owen Murphy now, is that the only solution is to build houses. And we need 25,000 a year. And we're not doing that. And we can't get there fast enough. And they're concerned that if we get there too fast, we overcook the whole thing and we go back to the start again. We go back to 2008, 2009 scenarios.
The question is there an ideological resistance within Fine Gael to directly building houses? Because that seems to be the answer.
They would say not.
They would say not. But, I mean, obviously, builders, if builders could make money out of building houses, they'd be building them. So, I mean, I think there's something in the argument from the Construction Industry Federation that the margins aren't there. So, I mean, that leaves the state. And I don't know, but the state seems to me to be markedly reluctant to get into the into large-scale direct building in the way that, for instance, both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil did in generations gone by.
OK. We're going to leave it there. Are you all finished now for Christmas?
No.
No.
Sadly, I'm not.
Really?
You're working with doesn't the working hacks never really quite finished, but hopefully.
Well, I'm putting my feet up anyway.
Oh, good for you. Good for you, David. I just wanted, before I let you go, to mention the front of the UK edition of The Sun, which is very exercised and upset about the Cadbury selection box decision to take out the fudge bar and replace it with the Dairy Milk Oreo. How do you feel about this dilemma? Bar humbug, they say, furious fudge axed from Xmas gift box. That's their lead story. Fudge
it was either that or the blue passport, so I suppose I'd actually rather read about the selection box than
fudge will never be axed from Irish politics.
I love it. What a way to go out. What a way to go out. Kevin, Lise and David, thank you very much indeed. We're going to take a break back after this.